Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to the 233rd edition of Money Matters. And the title of today's show is Welcome to July. Please regard that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, this community radio station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter, the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it or a little of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. Okay, so how is everyone? I was off for a while. I was traversing the streets of Japan to visit non-blood relatives for me and blood relatives for my children and the spouse. So that's what was going on today. Markets, well, while we were gone, we had the Brexit, the vote referendum from Britain to leave the Euro Union. And markets rocked and rolled while that happened. I think it lost about, Dow lost about, I don't know, 900 points or so. And then kind of rebounded. It's sitting at 817.856.37, down 62 today. And it seems like last year we've been talking about this 18,000 level. Up and through and down and through and up and through. And I'm getting used to the fact that every time it hits this 18,000 level, at least in the past, it continues to go back down again. It's odd. I've mentioned that the 18,000 level is a nice round number. And markets sometimes will resist or find support at round numbers. So it found support somewhere around 17,000. It's got a resistance around 18,000. So we've crossed 18,000, I think, at least, I don't know, dozen and a half times. That seems to be the line in the sand, is that 18,000 level. But we don't know. We got close to it and popped over a little bit, and now we're down to 17,856. The one surprising mover that continued to move, at least while I was gone, was gold, gold stocks. Gold really hasn't gone up a lot. I mean, it's gone up from, I don't know, 1150 to 1340. But if you look at the gold miners index, GDXJ, that's doubled, I think, close to doubled. And some of the other mining stocks have gone crazy. Now, that doesn't mean to go in and start buying these things. And it doesn't mean to go in and start selling these things. It's just an observation. So, yeah, so That's the story about that. So the Brexit, what does that mean? Well, it's a referendum, okay? Markets didn't like it for a while. Now they're ignoring it. Now, the referendum does not have to be followed by Parliament. Parliament could elect not to follow the will of the people. So it's not set in stone. It would also take 2 years to implement an exit for Britain to leave the euro. And there was some articles out from Bloomberg that basically said that a lot of people that voted to leave the euro didn't quite understand what they were voting for and would change their vote. So, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to have another vote just to make sure, because it only won by 4 percentage points, 52 to 48. The British pound, of course, got hammered right after that, because the thinking would be that if Britain leaves the euro, they are no longer constrained by the euro and who manages the euro, European Central Bank. So they could print as much money as they wanted to pay bills and to install more social programs. And if they print more money, it makes the money go down in value. And so that's why the British pound got hammered as soon as they elected to leave. It may be the reason gold went higher, because that meant that another major currency of the world would be printing more money, and gold is thought to be a bastion of safety against printed money. It is thought to be a bastion of safety against printed money. Whether it is or not is the opinion of anybody that perceives gold for what it is. The contagion factor could come into play here. The contagion factor basically says that if Britain decides to leave and another country heavily in debt like Portugal or Spain or Italy or Greece see Britain successfully leave the euro and discharge their debts by paying them in printed pounds, British pounds, other countries might say, well, look, Britain did it, and we owe a lot of euros, and we can't pay it back in euros, so we can just leave the European Union and go back to our own currency and then print up money to pay off what we owe. Convert the euro to a Greek drachma, and then we could print up a zillion drachmas to pay off what we owe the European Central Bank. So that's the thinking, that the contagion will spread to other countries, that more countries will want to leave. It would not surprise me to see more countries initiate votes along those lines. And in which case, if somebody initiated a vote along those lines, let's say Italy did it, I wouldn't be surprised to see their markets rock and roll until the conclusion of the vote came out. So the contagion is really the fear there. You know, if a lot of countries leave the euro, you know, euro is pretty big darn currency. So if a lot of countries leave the euro, could that weaken the euro, or could strengthen it? You know, you never know. You only people that remain in the euro are the countries that don't owe anything, so that might strengthen the euro. So I think the euro experiment, I never believed was a good one. And the reason being is because when you have one currency that is used by many nations, each nation's economy is represented in that currency. So if you have a bunch of nations that are strong and good economies that don't have huge deficits, using the same currency and under the same borrowing powers and interest rates as the other countries that may be overspending, it's like, imagine that today's credit system that we have today, regardless of your credit score, everybody could get the same amount of credit and the same interest rate. Okay, that's kind of close to what we're saying that might happen or is happening under the euro currency. You have countries that have not so good credit because they might run high deficits, and then they're borrowing at the same interest rates and borrowing under the same terms of countries that are sound. So the only analogy that I could think of is just imagine if our credit system had a credit score like you have, but all of us would charge the same interest rates. You could see, maybe you couldn't explain to me in detail how that might not work, but you would know in deep in your head that it won't work. And so That's really the closest analogy I can think of, is that you know, having the same credit for all of us would cause problems. It would basically maybe lead to people that were overspending to overspend even more. And people that are saving may not want to save because everybody else is borrowing. And that's exactly what's happening, is that the countries under the euro are, a lot of countries are borrowing even more, and the other countries that aren't borrowing are complaining, saying, hey, we're paying for those guys. So that's a problem with the Brexit. I don't know what will happen in the markets. No one knows what will happen. Summer is halfway here, halfway over. The sun, I think, is actually now starting to go down. Days are getting shorter, if I remember my calendar right. And beware the Ides of fall, as I always say. Fall, late summer, fall can be a time historically when markets may fall. It's not cast in stone, but some of our bigger corrections have happened in September and October. So we'll wait to see what will happen there and go on from there. So we'll just have to see what effect the Brexit has and whether other companies are going to step forward with their own Brexit vote. So I wouldn't panic right now. Panic in your portfolio is probably not a good thing. Most analysts would recommend against that, and I am one. If you're worried about stock markets, of course, heavier cash positions will mitigate some of the volatility as cash doesn't go up and down. You know, if you think the markets are going to go way up, then you might add stocks if that's what you believe. Or if you think markets are going to be going down, you might, get heavier cash positions. It's pretty much a no-brainer. Everybody would agree with that. It's not really an opinion. It's just a fact. So there you go. You have a lot of things to talk about today, so I don't think we're going to cover them all. Phone number's in the booth, 530-265-9555. I think I'll take calls throughout the show today if I can figure out how to work the phone patch, which I can. So if you want to call, 530-255-530. What's our number here? 530. I forgot. Well, 530-265-9555. I think that's it. Or 1-800-355-KVMR. For those of you on an 800 number. And so I'm looking through the things to cover today. We've covered the Brexit. Thank you very much. And I hope that explains what's going on. Summertime normally appears to be historically a calmer time in the markets. It is thought a lot of traders go on vacation, spend the money they made from you, and go to the Hamptons and the beach and all over, so there's not as much trading going on. So we're in the middle of summer. And so I suspect it to be rather mundane, but you never know. You know, anything can happen, right? Whoever thought January of this year would be such a rock and roll month, man, that was a brutal correction. And according to CNN Money, soda icon Coca-Cola announced back in May that it had temporarily stopped production of sugar-related Coke products. That was due to sugar shortages from Venezuela. The production was confined only to plants located in Venezuela. And Venezuela has some economic problems. Venezuela has massive inflation there. And they've got power problems and all sorts of problems. And so Coca-Cola couldn't get basic stuff like sugar. And so that's made say, well, we don't got sugar, we can't produce Coke. They are continuing to produce non-sugared products. And their water products. Coke has a lot of water products. But Venezuela, according to the IMF, its economy shrank by 5.7% last year and forecasts that Venezuela will be in recession until 2019 by them. So it sounds like the shortage of Coke is the least of Venezuelans' problems. And tax inversion, we spoke about on this show before. Tax inversion, what is tax inversion? It's also called corporate inversion. That's where a U.S. company buys or merges with a foreign company and then moves its official headquarters to that foreign country to avoid the U.S. income tax. Many companies have already done this, and the latest great version was going to be Pfizer and the large company who planned to merge with Allergan PLC. But once the rules came out, the Treasury Department issued new rules last month, making it harder for U.S. companies to do this. The Treasury became involved because Congress was fighting over what to do about inversion. The new rule states that if the U.S. company owns at least 80% of the combined companies, it will still be subject to U.S. tax laws, no matter where they are headquartered. Democrats want the threshold lowered from 80 to 50, and Republicans want to just wait and address the problem with tax reform. In the new regulation, there are also provisions, what is known as earning strippings. Kind of complicated. I'll give it to you in a nutshell. If you understand it, okay. If you don't, okay. The earning strippings stops a company from claiming a tax deduction on loans to its foreign headquarters. And if the U.S. company loans money to its foreign headquarters that it's merging with, you used to get a tax deduction. That would have reduced your tax rate. Now they've eliminated that. You can't deduct a loan to your foreign partner. Organization for International Investments, this is a conservative organization, warned that after reviewing the new rules that the regulations would increase the cost of investing and expanding over the U.S. and hurt U.S. businesses and hurt the economy in general as more businesses elect not to move here. The battle of tax inversion is far from over. It's a heated debate in Congress and likely to be a heated debate through the election. Many lobbyists is running to and fro the ivy halls of Washington, pitching their positions to any and all politicians who will listen. Although a larger tax overhaul will likely not happen this year, the recent step by the Treasury Department is thought by some to be a step in the right direction to prevent tax inversion. The other side of the aisle believes it's just another example of an onerous U.S. tax structure that ends up discouraging businesses from setting up in the United States in the first place. What do you think? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, edition 233. My name's Mark. I'll be right back. Well, maybe not. I'm right here. It's kind of funny. I have something going on with my CD player. Oh, there we go. I wanted to play a different song, but it's not playing. Okay, then. So be it. Well, you know, I'm not going to go away then. I'll just stay here with you, keep you company. Only have one song that works on this CD, and that's Money. Okay. The biggest scam on Wall Street years ago involved a former head of the NASDAQ stock exchange, Bernie Madoff. You've probably heard of that name before. He was convicted of running a Ponzi-type scheme named after investor Charles Ponzi, P-O-N-Z-I. The Ponzi scheme is an old one. It's a pyramid scheme. People give you money and you claim outrageous returns and you pay them money and you pay investors interest on their money, but you only pay it from new investors coming in and giving you more money. No money is ever really made. You just take it from the new investors and give it to the older investors. You claim to be making money, but in reality, you are not. The Madoff scam was one of the biggest headlines in the news at the time. It was said that schemes like this are what happens when easy money and credit pours out of the monetary authorities in a way of low interest rates, and then finds its way into the latest and greatest of bubbles, including Ponzi schemes. There are many disturbing facts around the Bernie Madoff case, one being that Bernie Madoff was in the head of the NASDAQ stock exchange a few years before the scheme surfaced at his firm, which was called Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities, LLC, formed in 1960. Madoff was its chairman until his arrest on December 11th, 08. I could say he apparently learned his trade well, heading up one of our most lucrative U.S. stock exchanges. You have to wonder, when the former head of one of our biggest exchanges morphs into a crook, what kind of people are overseeing our retirement funds and stock account money? Madoff's scheme netted somewhere in the area of $50 billion or more. Most of that disappeared. Interestingly enough, the SEC, the regulatory agency which is supposed to police things like this, had received numerous reports about the possibilities of improprieties at Madoff's firm. They even looked into the firm multiple times and found nothing. My question would be, that spawns the question, what kind of regulatory body is the SEC and how effective are they? I know that Congress is always calling for more regulations, but what good are more regulations when the authorities miss the obvious scams with the rules they do have? More regulations won't solve the problem if authorities don't use those regulations in their practice of oversight, which maybe they did not in Madoff's case, obviously, until the very end when they caught him. The SEC had plenty of ways to shut Madoff down should they have found something, but they found nothing. Something was amiss, but they found nothing until the end. Did they simply look the other way? Did the proverbial old boy network have anything to do with the lack of discovery, even though the complaints were numerous? Although Madoff was hauled off to the Hooskow for his Ponzi-like scheme. Oh, now it turns on. Most governments of the world could be said to operate in the exact same scheme. Let me repeat that. Most governments of the world could be said to operate the exact same scheme. One might be the Social Security system of this country. This was originally and still is labeled a trust fund, which means your retirement money is supposed to be locked away, safe and sound, and paid out when you retire. But the government has spent all the money in there and has for years. They just pay current liabilities with money from new workers. It sounds like a Ponzi scheme to me. And they put in IOUs to make up any shortfall. They sound like a real Ponzi scheme, don't they? This is the exact same thing that Madoff was forced to put on an orange jumpsuit for. The money system of the Federal Reserve has similar qualities as well. The Federal Reserve prints money at will and buys treasuries from another branch of the U.S. government, the Treasury Department. They issue these treasuries as IOUs. When the IOUs come due, they just buy back these IOUs with more printed money, in essence buying back its own debt with more debt. This is similar to using new investors' money to pay old investors. The feds take it one step further and conjure up more money from nothingness with a computer keystroke. Madoff himself never went that far. It could be argued there's little difference between what Madoff did and what the U.S. government does every day. But Madoff's problem is he's not the U.S. government. He also didn't own a printing press, of which the U.S. government does. Madoff went to prison because of the way he handled other people's money, illegally. But that particular illegality isn't all-inclusive to everyone and every institution. The same type of thing is used to finance government debt and many government programs. You could say the eyes of justice aren't so blind after all. It might be said they look the other way where the government is involved. So, along the economics of home maintenance, my 11-year-old daughter brought home two guinea hen chicks. Now, I've never owned a guinea hen, but they looked pretty cute at 4 weeks old. Let me tell you something. These guinea hens eat constantly. And although they were the size of a golf ball a month ago, they're now the size of a basketball. They also defecate constantly, so I know how and why they grow so fast. Upon further observation, I think I may have discovered the stupidest planet on the stupidest animal on the planet. You've likely heard the terms blank for brains. Well, that would be an improvement when it comes to a guinea hen. Guinea hens aren't very bright. They also hate being held. Probably because I hear the guinea hen tastes like chicken, so it's like filet mignon to predators. Trying to hold one, take it from me, I've tried, is like trying to put a Tyrannosaurus Rex under your tongue. It's very hard to do and not the best of ideas. The guinea hens scratch like hell, and they possess very sharp claws. Not like the killer death cactus sharp, but the claws are sharp nonetheless. I want to take a brief interlude for a lesson on the death cactus. The death cactus, which is my name for it, is the world's most hideous yet unkillable plant. I got mine near a Dow Chemical plant that used to make Agent Orange, so I was told, during the Vietnam War. And they also made something called Vicane. Vicane gas. That is a cockroach killer. I was told by the employees at the DuPont plant next door that the bumpers on all their cars in the parking lot might peel chrome. Why would chrome be peeled off a bumper? It might give you an idea of just how lethal this Vicane gas is. Keep in mind that this bug killer is designed to kill the most survivable creature, and probably the oldest on Earth, the proverbial cockroach. Take note, I nary saw a plant toward this factory, close to this factory, or anywhere near it. Except outside of the DuPont engineering office was this hideous 12-foot tall cactus, all knurled up with literally the sharpest spines I'd ever seen. They go right through leather gloves, right through them. They'll go right through a leather cowboy boot, and I almost went through the pair of pliers I needed to break off a piece. I thought it was an interesting plant, so I broke off a piece from pliers from my toolbox in my car. Let me tell you, this stuff grows anywhere, and I mean anywhere. Drop it on dirt, no need to plant it. Like a space alien, over a few days, it rights itself and starts growing. The older it gets, or the drier it gets, the sharper the spines. It needs no water. I know, because I have tried to kill various plantings of this thing by ignoring it. It cares not. I planted it in a tree knot. In a knot in a tree. No dirt. It grew. I have some in a pot nailed to the side of a tree to this very day. And I'm talking, I picked that plant up 20 years ago. I never water it. Never. And it thrives. Freezing temperatures turn it black and it looks dead. But don't be fooled. It is waiting for you to turn your back. From one tiny sprig, you can literally get thousands of plants, as every piece will grow no matter where you put it. I had one that grew on a brick. No roots, nothing. It just sat there and got bigger. Let me tell you, this is scary stuff. Plant it under a window, and I guarantee no burglar will enter. One may foolishly try, but you will find him likely impaled on this thing in the morning. Either that or a body part or two will remain, and certainly a lot of blood. I have tried to give pieces of it away, but no one will take it. It is now my white elephant gift. I force on people as a cruel joke. Beware this plant. It is a son of a bee. Now, back to the economics of guinea hens. Anyway, the claws of the guinea hens are sharp, but not death cactus sharp, but they will cause skin damage, and these hens squirm like hell in hell. If you don't hold both feet and body in your hands tightly, prepare to be harmed. They don't bite, thank God. But take it from me, they do not like to be held. They are without a doubt dumber than a retarded clam. They peep and peck at everything. Hold one, and they'll just hear peep, 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 peep. Put one down, and they'll even peck at solid rock or metal. They walk like a small ostrich. Their look and their mannerisms say, "Look at me. I am at the bottom of the food chain and dumb as hell," which is all true. God, however, not being without compassion, gave them one quality that prevents them from being eaten into extinction. They run like hell. Mine aren't even big yet, and they can scoot. The good news is, if two get out, they stick together. They are codependent, so they don't run in opposite directions. At least, they didn't when I let them out. So I did let out two by mistake and said, "Oh, no, there they go. I will never catch them, and my daughter will kill me." Ah, but not so fast. Since they stick together, they both bolted in opposite directions, but only for a second. As soon as they realized they were separated, they both stopped. Like two Siamese twins, but tethered by an invisible thread, they are too stupid to coordinate an agreed-upon escape route. So when one ran, he got farther away from the other and stopped and thought, "Uh-oh. I'm alone." And I thought, my chance. Grabbing one, I placed it in the cage, and the other, too stupid to go it alone, halted long enough for me to grab it. I tossed it in with the other, and now they were both caught, blaming each other for their cursed codependency. I, on the other hand, worshipped Allah for making them codependent, so I did not have to face the wrath of my 11-year-old daughter and subsequently her mother for my stupidity by letting them out. So I have two guinea hens now, soon to get more. I hear they are good for bugs, I hear they are good for bugs, as in they eat them. The flock, or do we call it a gaggle, run together, and they stay around if you feed them. At night, they roost in the trees, so the mortality rate due to predators is an acceptable 1% a year, much like drone collateral damage in the Mideast. After all, if the government can accept a 1% collateral damage on innocents killed by drones, I can certainly not fret over a massacred guinea hen or two a year from now. A friend of mine has like 50. He had like 60, But he had them a few years, so the 1% death toll was taking a bite out of his numbers. He told me the worst predator is the hawk. The hawk apparently loves slow and delicious birds, and they apparently hit them on the ground going about 30. That way, it leaves a trail much like a crashed airliner into a hillside. A 15-foot swath trail of destruction marred in blood, guts, and feathers. I picture that in my head and I say, wow, I gotta see that. So right now we have two of these prehistoric birds, looking to get more, and I vision a running triangle of hens in my mind, eating bugs and ticks and keeping me company on hot days as I bask in the pool. But I think, all in all, I don't know how this whole guinea thing will work out. It certainly sounds like a good idea. I mean, see it my way. Fairly hassle-free running, bug-eating, self-docking birds. Kind of like a Roomba vacuum that runs around the house and parks itself when done. Then again, I've had lots of ideas that sounded good at the time. Think of a shot of tequila or two, and then I live to regret that decision the next day. Something in my reptilian part of my cerebral cortex is saying, besides eat them, Mark, that some other fate awaits me, as things just aren't that easy. I mean, to get a roaming bird that won't run away, eats all the bugs, self-parks itself in the trees at night, and basically doing all of that without me having to deal with them? I have my fingers crossed. I just sure hope to hell they have an appetite for death cactus. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. I'll be right back. Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark. Thank you for joining me on the community radio station. And you can go to your community radio station website and find out all about this show and additional shows of fine programming. And that's always a good thing to do. You can log on to your radio station webpage and see the program schedules and the rest. And it keeps you in touch of what's going on. So, in other news, we talked about this last show, and it's disturbing to me. I mean, it's this, what we have called the war on cash. Now, there's an old saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. And with terrorism, and basically terrorism and money laundering, you know, the powers that be have not let this crisis go to waste. And there are many analysts that are saying, many, you know, conspiracy theorists and other people that are writing about this so-called war on cash. Now, the war on cash is thought to be that the authorities, monetary authorities, and the governments in control of the world want to eliminate cash altogether. Eliminate it. Now, you can see the slight progression as larger and larger bills are becoming harder to get. I mean, you used to be able to get a $10,000 bill and a $5,000 bill and a $1,000 bill and a $500 bill in the United States, and you can't get them anymore. You can only get 100. There's talk, so I read on the Weiss website, martinweiss.com. I believe the website was saying that there's talk about going all the way down to only issuing a 5, but that's just talk, of course. The war on cash is a term used by authors detailing the proposed progressive regulations being enacted by monetary authorities to slowly reduce, then rumored, eliminate cash entirely. The reason given for each addition of new regulation is to rein in tax dodgers and cut off terrorism money. The other reason assumed by many people, however, is to garner complete control over every citizen on the globe by monetary elites by just using electronic cash, which is trackable. The regulations so far in existence and proposed are far-reaching. They want to track cash deposits to bank accounts, which they probably already do. They're asking for identification when purchasing many money orders. Requiring monies over a certain amount be declared when crossing borders, that's already in place. Reducing the amount of cash transactions, a lot of countries have already done that, such as, I'll have to look that one up. I'll have to look that one up and get back to you on that one. But cash transactions, I believe, in Europe have been limited over 2,000, if I believe 2,000 euros. I'll verify that in just a minute. Of course, you're requiring the reporting of cash transactions, eliminating large denomination bills with a host of other new onerous rules, and these rules are increasing. Oh, here it is. Many countries are doing away with large denomination bills, such as Europe, which just did away with the 500 bill. U.S. did away with the 10, 5, and $1,000 bills, as I mentioned. Go to your bank and try paying a bill with cash. Prepare to show your ID and make the deposit into your account first, and then they take it out of the account to pay the bill. Buy a prepaid Visa at your local grocery store and prepare to have your driver's license scanned. That's right. I bought one, and they did scan it. And I was required to give a Social Security number and name on the website before the card is activated. The largest unregistered prepaid Visa, well, you don't have to do that, went from $100 to $25 just last month in the Safeway down here, down the street. Credit card and other electronic methods of payment are being encouraged and a variety of methods being increased. Think Apple Pay. Social Security numbers, which were once promised never to be used as identification, are now usually required for everything. Check in at an airport and scan a credit card, any credit card, and your personal information, ticket, and boarding pass pops up regardless of whether you use that card to buy the ticket or not. Obviously, they're all tied together, eh? Check into a number of major theme parks and you are asked to be fingerprinted upon entry. I know it happened to me. Cell phones are tracked. Your purchases are tracked. Your habits and haunts are obviously tracked. Our electronic trail is marked and easily read. Cash is the only thing that is non-trackable. And that is the purported reason someone wants it gone entirely, so they say. Not that there is one person or one entity in control of everything, but the implications are indeed frightening. If cash is eliminated, your footprint is unavoidable. Your paths are easily monitored. Taxes will be easy to garner. They just debit it from your accounts. Bail out a bank or public fund? Easy. They just push a button and you pay. No need to adjust public interest rates. They just charge more interest on the balances on your card. Avoiding income taxes will be most impossible. And if the government needs additional emergency funding, they can just take it for the good of the country. Although currently, we can still use cash, and no one entity or person can debit accounts, so I think the IRS can, without your consent, the wheels could be argued to be in motion for a cashless society. The elimination of cash would make the Big Brother 1984 scenarios from the George Orwell's then futuristic novel that much easier to implement. Although funding for terrorism and tax evasion certainly uses cash and cash-like products to move and acquire off-the-grid funding, I think everyone agrees the vast majority of cash transactions by far are by law-abiding citizens. Many argue that the wheels of possible tyranny progress ever so steadily, as they do, our basic freedoms, and now possibly our freedom to use cash that was rightly earned and already paid taxes on, is being slowly taken away. Indeed, once again I say, the implications here are frightening. You're listening to Money Matters, the show 233. My name's Mark. I am so glad to be here today. And we have a couple of minutes left. And there's a article out here. And this is coming out of finance.yahoo.com. And it's an interesting article about illegal immigration. And the article goes on to read, demonstrators from the immigrant advocacy group CASA marched on June 20th in hopes of a Supreme Court ruling in their favor. The article goes on to say, with Donald Trump as the presumptive Republican nominee, the topic of immigration will likely emerge as a major topic. I think we can all agree with that. Trump's opponent, Mrs. Clinton, has framed the need for immigration reform as a family issue and an economic issue, while calling for a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Indeed, figures show from this article, many undocumented immigrants in the U.S. already contribute a great deal to the country's economy. They contribute a great deal to the country's economy. That report out from Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. That report noted that in 2014, unauthorized immigrants had a labor force participation rate of 70%. In other words, 70% of them were working, compared to 62.9% for the overall population. This Bank of America Merrill Lynch report also cited research that refutes the notion that America's roughly 11 million unauthorized immigrants might be taking jobs from U.S. citizens. A study from the National Bureau of Economic Research shows that immigrants are imperfect substitutes for native U.S. workers due to different occupation choices and skills. And immigration has a positive effect on the average wage of the U.S.-born workers overall. Of course, new policies on immigration could change the economic situation for both those who came to the U.S. with or without authorization. Bank of America Merrill Lynch report looks at two possible scenarios that could change the participation rate for undocumented workers, one of which Trump has proposed and the other which Clinton has proposed in the past. The first scenario from Trump would expand a program known as E-Verify that lets businesses determine the eligibility of employees to work in the U.S. If that program were mandated across the U.S. for new hires, as Trump wants it to be, the labor force would shrink by 3.8 percentage points over the next 15 years. What do you think of that? Bank of America, Merrill Lynch's second scenario would benefit the economy and would involve increasing the numbers of H-1B visas, which let U.S. companies hire foreign workers, and employment-based green cards that were issued. Hillary Clinton spoke out back in 2007 in favor of increasing H-1B visas. Meanwhile, the proposal would eliminate both green cards for the siblings of U.S. citizens and diversity visas. They go on to say that this move would boost the overall labor force by 0.7 percentage points over a 15-year period and increase GDP by 0.7 percentage points. Regardless of what form immigration takes, there is a growing call for it. That's partly because the Supreme Court recently blocked President Barack Obama's plan to help 4 million unauthorized immigrants live and work in the U.S. without fear of deportation. That was blocked by the Supreme Court. A 2009 report from the Council on Foreign Relations still seems relevant today, noting, quote, the continued failure to devise and implement a sound and sustainable immigration policy threatens to weaken America's economy, to jeopardize its diplomacy, and to imperil its national security. That, again, from a 2009 report from the Council on Foreign Relations. So that is a hot topic, and I know that it's going to be something coming up. You know, this is going to be a hot topic, man. I'm just reading something else here. Yeah, that's old news, so I won't cover it. In any case, so you are listening to Money Matters Show 233. Welcome to July. Hello to July. My name's Mark, and we are coming into the close of the market today. And today, of course, you may be hearing this at a different time on a recorded program. But today being Thursday, we can take a look at where the Dow is falling today. See if it's still falling. Dow's only down 31. Gold is down 0.4%. Oil is down 4.76%. Dow sitting at 17,887, almost at the close, and that is today, Thursday, July 7, 2016, although you may be listening to this at a later date. The show is rebroadcast on a variety of stations at days and times that sometimes I am not aware of. So 233 is the show. My name's Mark. You can email the program director for questions about the show, of course. And remember, discussions in this show are not to be construed as specific recommendations or construed as investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research. Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only and those of the articles and authors that I have read. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this community radio station, its staff members, or underwriters. My name's Mark. It's been a pleasure serving you today. I hope you have a great day and a great weekend. We'll be back with another Money Matters in 2 weeks. Have a great day, and God bless. This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.